Hello everyone, welcome to Combox where the game lives on. I'm Varun and I'm joined by Jared, and today's footmarks is on Tristan Stubbs and the finishing anchors, or I like to call it the bane of my existence. So Jared, how do you talk about Tristan Stubbs without me yelling at them?
I think it's a really good example of modern cricket being so different to the way that we look at it. I think the vast majority of people who would come to this would think that Tristan Stubbs is actually a hitter, right? Mm. Because we've all seen him hit sixes. And I think it's a really good example of the fact that the game has changed so dramatically that someone like Tristan Stubbs can be actually, I don't know if defensive is the right way, but conservative for vast periods of his innings. And then he goes, what if I just hit every ball for six? And so I think a lot of people will be confused at him even being in this conversation. But I think by the end, they'll be like, oh, okay, how did I not know this beforehand?
So in the IPL batting at number 5-7, I think this, let me just look at this. So there's five people that have a true average of over 20. For those who don't know, true average is contextual. So for the overs you bat and the places you bat, how much better reverse you are than what you're expected to be. So those people are JP Duminy, MS Dhoni, Tilak Varma, Tristan Stubbs, and David Miller. And the shocking thing about all of this is JP Duminy has a better true strike rate than Tristan Stubbs does. And I don't think JP Duminy himself would say that statement is true.
Yeah, I wondered actually when you were writing this, how much JP Duminy would you have even watched?
A decent amount of him in the IPL, yeah. Because he played for Delhi for a while, didn't he?
I'm just having a look. He played 83 matches in the IPL. It's funny, he's ended up with quite a few. He's played, what, about 230-odd internationals. Is that right? No, sorry, 330-odd internationals. And almost 100 extra games in the IPL. So 80-odd games in the IPL. So 400 of what are going to be in the future considered major games, right?
And yet, nearly played 200 ODIs, fucking hell.
Yeah, and yet he kind of has no real lasting legacy on the sport, right? And, you know, for those of us who saw him when he was young, we all thought he was going to be the next big thing. And I saw him and Amla when he was young. I picked Duminy over Amla. I was like, my God, this guy could do everything. Like, he's going to be incredible. And within a year of that, I was like, that was the worst take I've ever had. And luckily, I made far worse ones after that. But it's really fascinating to me. And a lot of his usage, I would say, when it comes to South Africa and IPL teams, was the fact that he could bowl part-time off-spin, right? It was the little bit of off-spin that he gave you. I think he was one of the last... up until there was someone in Bangladesh, and then there was Jos Buttler, and the only specialist number seven between them was JP Duminy, who clearly was picked to bowl off spin in these games, but then South Africa just forgot to use him. And so he didn't actually bowl that much off spin when he batted at number seven, weirdly enough. And so he's got this sort of, I don't know, Forrest Gump type thing. If you go back, he's everywhere at all times, right? But never really the main story of any of it. But if you do remember him, it's not. You know, I mean, you and I have done so many pieces about South Africa getting stuck and, you know, the strike rate and, you know, in World Cups. JP Duminy is in about half of those stories of the problem here was JP Duminy was batting. He got stuck and then South Africa got stuck and they lost this very important game. And so he's, I don't want to say he's the poster child of it because there's about five of them, but he's certainly that. And so when you see a stat like he has a better true strike rate than... Tristan Stubbs, it does kind of flip your perception of the world.
I think not just that, it's better than Dhoni and Tilak as well.
I mean, Tilak is a breed on his own. I suppose at this point, so this is the difference between someone like Dhoni and JP Duminy. Dhoni by this, if you take away the hardcore Dhoni fans and the CSK fans, anyone who's like chatted about cricket has probably at one stage or another been like, well, he does go quite slow in chases though, doesn't he? Right? He does wait until the end. We at least have an inkling of what MS Dhoni is. I don't think would we just say 400 major international games? I just think if we even sampled like hardcore, like cricket fans, I'm not sure they would have an opinion on JP Duminy, other than perhaps when he was young, everyone thought he was going to be better than he was. That's like the only opinion is like a narrative based thing. Very little of this is to do with actually how he played cricket.
Yeah, you were saying like how many he played 80 IPL games. I feel like I've seen a lot of them and I could not tell you a single innings he played.
No, I
don't remember any of them.
If you'd have told me he played 20 IPL games, I would have been like, that sounds about right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so, and it's the same with internationals. I knew he played a lot of limited overs cricket, but he almost played 50 test matches as well. Like, you know, this is a highly talented player who, for whatever reason, didn't quite maximize his potential, but he just hasn't left an impact on the game of, like, you know, other people, right? Of, you know, I'm just going to look up a random cricketer here to see how this feels. So he's played basically the same amount of international games as Carl Hooper. Carl Hooper's got a real lasting impact on the game, right? And Carl Hooper averages in the 30s in both formats. It's not like Carl Hooper's like a superstar, you know, runs or anything.
If you ignore it from a talent point of view, like, would we say Dumini and him have had similar careers in ODI cricket?
Oh my God, did he have? Yeah, I think Dumini averages more than him, doesn't he?
Yeah,
I would have said they would have had similar ODI careers, probably slightly different positions, right? Dumini probably comes in mm-hmm. a little bit later. But again, thinking back on it, I remember there always being this thing of, like, every team, and I know we'll come to him in a minute, but every team trying to come up with their own Michael Bevan. And I don't remember JP Dumini ever being mentioned in that conversation. And yet...
Oh, by the way, sorry. I was looking at the adjusted stats, nearly identical.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I think from that perspective, again, you have this player who sort of existed, did a very good role, and no one really took any notice of it. And probably, and maybe some of this is just simply that he never lived up to who he should have been, right? But if anything, he was seen as a conservative player who was often in the side because he was, you know, a very good fielder and a handy off spinner, rather just a good
than professional,
right? Yeah, just a good cricketer. Everyone liked him. He's quite a smart guy, from what I've heard as well. Like, you know, there are lots of positives about him. The only other thing that I remembered is, and this is just going back on my aesthetics, is that he was a much better player of spin than pace, right? But he could play pace because he's from South Africa. So maybe the combination of those two things also helped him. But I could never remember. If you asked me to tell you a time when he cut wild against a spinner, could never tell you that. He just didn't go out to spinners, is my memory, over and over again. He would face spin for hours and never go out.
It might be 2015, he's Delhi's captain in the IPL for a season. Like, which is just wild, by the way.
So I feel you're making up stats about him now that yeah. that don't exist. But okay, I am genuinely shocked at that. That feels, as I said, a little bit made up. But I suppose, yeah. I mean, is he like the Aaron Finch we never noticed?
Yeah, probably. Like, I think he's just so invisible. Okay, so you were mentioning in the piece that this seems to be a very South African thing where they seem to be drawn to these type of players for whatever reason. They'll take in transformative players and trying to fit them into a mold, aren't they? Because even this season, Jared, I don't know if you looked at Klaassen's true values. His true strike rate 0. But with him and Tilak, I don't know if they're finishing anchors because they profile like one. But whenever he's anchored, he's not finished. And whenever he's finished, he's not been anchoring. If it makes sense. Same thing.
You can go back to all the sort of ill-fitting teams that they had, right?
Mm-hmm.
The ones we've talked about quite a lot. I think the most fascinating South African team might be the one in 2023 50 over World Cup, right? Where essentially Heinrich, Miller, Klaassen, and I'm forgetting, there's someone else
Rossi.
In that, but who did I say? Oh, yeah, Russie, yeah. He was the first one that came to my mind, too. I thought I'd already said him. Those guys, and I've said this before, what they would try and do is they would bat to about the 35th over, not lose more than 4 wickets, and then just try and score at, like, T20 rates for the rest of the game and get themselves up to 330, 350, and then hope their bowlers would defend it. And that is actually, I think, in a South African mindset, the ideal team that they've ever had, right? And you look at someone like Quinton de Kock, who in Test cricket, what, top 5 strike rate of all time? Quinton de Kock, like, he's got an incredible strike rate. In one day cricket and T20 cricket, we've never seen that Quinton de Kock, right? It's only recently we started to see it with Quinton.
He's good in ODI cricket. Like, I don't know, he's a good, like, a bit Shikhar Dhawan-esque in a way, right? He's above par, but
yeah, there's nothing wrong with him as a player. Yeah. But again, in Test cricket, we're seeing him completely off the chain. And then when he comes to these other formats, it's like he gears down. And you look at South African players pretty consistently, with Lance Kluza the only exception, and they found other ways to ruin him, right? But South African players in white ball cricket sort of find a type And then they play to that type. And they've only got like a couple of different roles that they are ever looking for in their team. And I would argue that the 2023 team basically was four finishing anchors.
Mm. Yeah, it was anchors and finishing anchors, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, anchors would have been, who would have opened with De Kock in that?
So you had De Kock, Timber, Rossi, yeah. Markram at four.
Yeah.
Klaassen, five, Miller, six, Markram.
So anchors and finishing anchors. And I would say Quinton almost played like an anchor at times in ODI cricket as well. He's on the verge of it anyway, right? Again, not cutting loose. He wasn't using his full skill sets the way that he has been in the last year and a half in T20.
I feel like they, I think low key, I do think, wonder if Klusner was a finishing anchor too. They made him one. Because I was looking at his true values. True average of 20, true strike rate of 5 since 99.
I mean, the fact that they ruined Lance Klusner is the saddest thing I've ever heard anyone say. I do also think, though, with him, if he'd just been up the order, his true strike rate would have been like plus 25, because I don't think he would have played at a different speed if he came in the 20th over. But yeah, so I do think there is something within South Africa that this is the way that they go about cricket, this sort of conservative, you know, they've been playing white ball cricket for a very long time. Not specifically white ball, but they're the people who brought the ring in. You know, they sort of modernized ODI cricket after England had invented it. And they played it in a very formulaic way. And it's like they try and find players to fit each individual role rather than maybe some other players who are at least a little bit more willing. Like Australia is a bit formulaic at times, but Australia's still willing to let Andrew Symonds be Andrew Symonds, even if it's a lesser degree of him. Glenn Maxwell and Australia constantly fighting, but there are also elements of that's Maxie, that's what he does.
Well,
right?
They let head be head.
Yeah, right. I'm not sure we've ever really seen that with South Africa. I think we've always seen players kind of always playing slightly within themselves all the way through. And as you and I know, they've had De Villiers, they've had Klaassen, they've now got Brevis. And you know, Quinton Cock is another guy I would put on that list. I think Miller and Stubbs could be these kinds of guys, right? Yeah. And they're always trying to bring them back to this finishing anchor or the anchor style because they feel a little bit more comfortable with that. And hilariously, that's generally why they lose so many knockout games, because they play within themselves where other teams go for it.
Yeah, so the other person is David Miller as well, right? He's a finishing anchor which is weird because he should have been a transformative hitter as well, Jared, right?
Yeah.
Like, how good was David Miller when he came in? I think CS was saying this as always, like, well, Miller threatened to be a transformative hitter and then he, like, before he geared down us as well, isn't it?
Yeah. And how many times have you seen
South
him?
Africa, because in the same year, the issue is what South Africa had, what Miller 4 and Stubbs at, not yeah, Stubbs at 5 in the T20 World Cup. And Delhi had that as well. It's, for whatever reason, it just does not work because both of them were trying to do the same thing. That's what happened in the semis, right?
Yeah. And I think this comes back to the modern cricket argument that we're having, which is that I think if you, what would their strike rates be, right? If you just look at their strike rates raw, I think their strike rates look really good. But the reason they look really good is because of this very odd method that they have. And I think you put it best when you were looking at Tristan Stubbs' strike rate in the middle overs of T20 cricket. His true strike rate is minus 38 or minus 40 or something.
Yeah, I think it's minus 35.
Right.
In
so that means
first
for
10 balls, it's minus 43, I believe.
Yeah.
That's the one.
So that means for every ball he's facing in the middle overs of a T20 game, Tristan Stubbs. And remember, he's batting at number 5. So he's going to face quite a few of these, right? For every ball he's facing, you're getting 0.4 of a run less than what you would expect, right? Mm-hmm. What does that go up to when he gets to the death?
What was it, plus 60?
Yeah, it's more. It's basically, he flips it by a run. He goes from negative 0.4 to plus 0.6. So he is one run, a ball better at the death, right, than he is in the middle. Now, I'm all for conserving your wicket if you're a hitter that you know, and I would say that, you know, guys like Tristan Stubbs, Tim David, David Miller, all those guys, I know they're slightly different players, but I think that those sorts of guys, once they get on a roll of hitting sixes, it almost doesn't stop, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm all for them starting a little bit slower at times as well. But you can't wait until the last four overs every single time to suddenly start scoring. And if you look at their pattern, this is clearly on purpose, right? There's no reason why Tristan Stubbs can't be scoring quicker than he is earlier on. He's going out of his way to be like, I don't know, Ajinkya Rahane against in the middle overs, right? And then he becomes Andre Russell at the death. It's such a bizarre combination that he doesn't need to do. Cricket boards actually make watching their games almost impossible. I spend almost as much time trying to find where I can view it as I do actually following the action. That is why I use NordVPN. They let me find all the cricket I want to watch while protecting me from the nasty side of the internet. Nord will free your cricket matches. Grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/goodareas to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan plus 4 additional months on top. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Watch every match with NordVPN.
So I was actually looking at Stubbs' record, like how slow or quick he starts and chases. On average, in his first 10 balls, he's 4 runs per over less than the required rate in his chasing. Which, how are you that bad? The issue, again, which goes back to the moral obligations of finishing anchors, Jared, is I still see the value in it because if you're 20 for 3, you want Stubbs.
Yeah.
When you're chasing 160, right? You want Rinku. We saw Rinku do that in one of the games as well. He was, what, like, I think 38 or 38, and he finishes like 83 or 51, right? Tilak did that in one of those games. There is a value in them doing it. But then this is the same issue we have with traditional anchors. Is no one is saying, like, Kane Williamson shouldn't be 50 or 40 on a 140 turner, right? We are saying he shouldn't be 50 or 40 on a road. And this goes back to that point. I have no issue with Stubbs being 10, like 11 of 10. When he's coming in at 24-3 chasing 160. Don't beat 11 of 10 when you're chasing 11 and a half and over and let that rate get to 14 and then try to hit sixes and fail.
Well, like, also,
that's my issue with them.
The other problem is that we know he gets to about 11 of 10 or 10 of 10 over and over again, right? if you're then going to score at a strike rate of 270 in the death every time, that's fine. But if you are wasting 20 balls to do that, am I not better off with someone who will have a strike rate of 230 or 240 at the death, of which there are much more options available to me on the market, right? Rather than getting a guy who's going to take all that time to get to that gear, right? When he has to hit all those sixes at that point because they're so far behind, right? Yeah. Like, and that's the issue with that, I think, comes down to those two things. And obviously a big part of this article is about Michael Bevan and a little bit is about MS Dhoni, but we've covered MS Dhoni and chasing before. The Dhoni and Bevan methods actually make a lot more sense for the eras that they were in. If you look at Dhoni, he only had to hit a few fours and a few sixes when he had to catch up, right? Which means he's always doing the maths going, okay, if I play 2 attacking shots, one of them is probably going to go for a boundary here. So as long as I don't go out, if I keep all my attacking shots for the end and hopefully, you know, I can freak out the opposition and I keep myself calm, I will get a couple of bad balls and I will put those away and I will get the boundary. That makes sense. We might still have elements of issues with it with, you know, you're trusting your partners too much. A lot of other players are going out because they're trying to keep up with the rate. You know, there are lots of other issues with it. And if you go to the Michael Bevan one, even more so, right? Michael Bevan's like, it doesn't really matter what I do as long as I get it to the fact that I need 2 or 3 boundaries in the last 2 or 3 overs. I'm always going, if I'm out there, I'm going to find a way to get 2 or 3 boundaries. The problem with the Stubbs method is even in the impact sub era, even in an era where we're almost going at 10 runs and over in the IPL this year, consistently hitting sixes at the end when the best bowlers in the world are trying to stop you from doing that is actually a very, very hard thing to do. So he's threading the needle in a way that he probably doesn't have to. If he was just scoring at a neutral rate in the middle overs, not a positive one, just a neutral rate in the middle overs, and then occasionally going wild at the end like he does, he would be a much better player. We're not saying he has to change his entire method. He has every skill that you need. He really is the future of finishing anchors, right? Because he can bat number 3 in a test match. He's got incredible hand-eye coordination. He can improvise and he has incredible power and he can go in a roll with that power, right? So it's not just a one-off thing. He can go in a roll of hitting 3, 4 sixes in a row if he has to. He has everything you need, but because he's going so much slower, in the middle overs, he's basically making it like he has to hit 3 sixes in an over quite often at the death. And the impact sub hasn't infected. It hasn't infected. I'm going to use infected. It hasn't infected the death, right? And so it's making it really hard. Whereas I think with Dhoni, I think in the middle overs, Dhoni was a minus 20 on true strike rate and was about a plus 30. So he still has a pretty big swing. you'd say minus 20 is probably a little bit too negative, but he's within the ranges, right? He's like, I'm not going to go too slow. I'm going to find my twos. I'm going to, you know, rotate the strike a little bit. I'm going to wait for the fastballs to come back on. And then I'm going to go hog wild when we need to right at the end. And we'll see if we can win this game or we see if we can set this total. Stubbs is basically pressing pause, going to get a soft drink and waiting for the death overs to come.
Yeah, the issue with his method, Jared, is it actually hasn't worked for him. So, because he's been part of 9 wins chasing and 12 losses. That's a negative ratio, right?
Thank you.
Successful IPL chases.
Can you explain that to me again? So 12 is more than 9.
Yeah, just a bit. Yeah. What was I saying? Yeah, he averages 114 at a strike rate of 136 in successful chases. Hmm. And he's averaging 28 at a strike rate of 168 in failed ones. So do you reckon in his head he's like, well, every time I'm going faster, we're losing, so therefore I should go slower?
Yeah, I wonder if... So I've always had this theory that, yes, Dhoni and Bevan were the best chasers ever, but were there, like, other players who were just as good who just weren't out as much? Not out as much, sorry. So those other players, like, I mean, I think for a long period of time, Chris Gayle was the best chaser in cricket, right? But he was quite often out. But he'd already won the chase by the time we got there, right? So you know, Kohli, Bevan, and Dhoni, their method is a not out method, right?
Yeah.
Whereas there are probably many other players in the second innings who, just by the way they play, have already put their team in a position where it's very hard for them to lose, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that it's hard. I wouldn't even know who to identify as those people, right? I'm sure if we did it, we'd be able to find some. But you'd be they're much harder to identify that kind of player than it is the Bevan or Dhoni player or Kohli player, which is so easy. Their average is massively up on everyone else's. They're not out at the end. We see them raising their bat, coming off and celebrating, right? So I wonder if once you fail a couple of times trying to go fast, you just go, well, actually, I should be doing this other method. And again, I'm not against the other method. As long as you're just going at a neutral rate. I think for me, it's once you start going into massive negatives, someone has to make that up. And it's either Stubbs at the end with sixes or it's the batter at the other end. And I think that was one of the big arguments with Bevan, like even amongst people who backed him, was how often does the guy at the other end go out, right? Because Bevan is just not trying to score that quickly. And the other guy's like, well, we're going to have to get a boundary here. And Bevan's like, no, we'll be fine. We'll get all the boundaries at the end. And the other guy's like, well, I don't know if I can guarantee that. And I think with Stubbs, he's just making it way more extreme in both directions.
Agreed. What was I going to say?
I don't know.
Just lost track. What was I going to say? Yeah, sorry, about Bevan. One of the reasons Bevan could be Bevan is he played in for the best ODI team ever.
Yes.
He had a bunch of people who could all go at an above power rate. Right, because you had obviously outliers like Gilchrist and Simons, but you had Ponting, who was an above par batter for his era as well. Hayden, who was above par, and even Damian Martin was above par for his era. Right, Stubbs basically has no one. I want to say, like, he has Miller, who's trying to do the same thing as he is, and we saw that in the Chennai chase where Miller was 17 or 14 and he got out, and then what was it? Stubbs was 11 or 10, and he tried to get going. He kind of got going, and then he got out.
Yeah.
So there was Do you remember? It was the Gujarat game where Miller refused a single. And people were like, well, that's a big mistake. I think I was saying in the group, him being 13 of 11 in that run chase is worse than him refusing that single.
Yeah. Because
he let the red get so out of hand, right? Because even though he didn't get out, what happened in that game was Miller was 12 of 10. He was injured. Stubbs comes and he was like 6 of 7 and he gets out. So even though he technically makes it up, KR Rahul felt the impact of both slowdowns. So he had to get going and he got out. Right? And people were slagging him off.
100%. I think you're 100% right on that. And I would take it a step back too as well of Dhoni and Bevan also did it in just really, really well-functioning teams, right? So Bevan didn't always have the great batting lineup because obviously that sort of comes in the late 90s and he started doing this in the early 90s, but he still had Warner McGrath, right? So the opposition isn't scoring 30 plus every game, are they? Right. And you look at Chennai had this, you know, really well-weighted, well-balanced team. Everyone sort of knew their role and their definition, you know, through a couple of different generations. And even for India, right? Look at the top order that he had to deal with, right? He quite often coming in, you know.
I remember looking this up, the 2000s ODI team was, they had a lot of outliers, right? You had Sehwag at one end.
Yeah.
Yuvraj Singh was above par. Even Gambhir and Virat, we don't talk about it, were above par number threes and number fours in that period, weren't they?
Yeah.
And then Yuvraj at the end, Yusuf.
Yeah. So
Sachin as well.
Right? You have this, it's easier to play that role. And this is something we're talking about. This is a completely different kind of cricketer. But we talked about this with the Eldon Baptiste, Tim Bresnan, Jamie Overton type cricketer, where, and, you know, we've now had feedback from Tim Bresnan and Jamie Overton on this, by the way. But what I was saying is that these cricketers are fantastic, right? But they only make good teams really, really good. And in poorer teams, they don't really change the needle all that much. So Overton having, like, the best T20 year of his life at the moment, right? But in a poor team in Chennai, by the time he comes on the bowl, they're already out of the game. And by the time he comes on to bat, chances are they're already out of the game. And so he's not having the impact that he should be having as a 90-mile-an-hour fast bowler who can hit sixes, right? Mm. That's just the kind of cricketer he is. It's not his fault that he's having, you know, that he's struggling to have that kind of impact, right? But if you put Jamie Overton in another team at the moment who is, you know, if you put him in Gujarat, right? It's a completely different world that Jamie Overton suddenly comes in, right? They don't have to, suddenly they've got another guy who can bowl back of the length into the pitch like all their other seamers, but he's now the fourth most important version of that bowler in that team. And when they get stuck and the top order doesn't do what it wants, you can bring him in and hopefully he gets the 30 off 15, right? He makes the Gujarat team way better and he makes the CSK team not that much better at all. And I think it's the same with the finishing anchors. I do think there is an argument to be said that in the Bevan case and the Dhoni case, that as great as they were, right, they're also perfectly played out in the kind of teams and setups that they had, right? Which maybe in Tristan Stubbs' case, it's not just the fact that he has David Miller. It's also the fact that their top order really hasn't done enough. You know, KL's been great. Nisanka's been dropped. Rizvi had a couple of good innings and then went missed. Like, they just haven't done enough all the way through. And so, you know, maybe in that kind of a team, it would work. But on top of that, they then have two players who are exactly the same. One's right-handed, one's left-handed, right? Yeah. They're even in the way of each other when they come in to bat, right? Because when you want one of them to come in, you want both of them to come in. Ross Taylor couldn't see at night or when the clouds were in. Eventually, he had to see an eye specialist who would fix his eyesight. In the 2 years before the change, he still averaged more than 50 in international cricket. The top level of batting talent can basically see in the dark. That is who we are talking about in our new book, The Art of Batting. Head over and order your copy today.
Yeah, they also have Rizvi, right? Rizvi's a slow starter as well, I want to say.
Definitely.
Even Nitish Rana, like, I don't know if Nitish Rana is a slow starter or is a shit starter. He's one of those, I remember, I feel like. So depending on when he comes in. So it's the entire team structure is wrong. We were discussing this well before the tournament as well, right? The moment I looked at Miller and Stubbs, I was like, this is going to come back to haunt them. And it has on two or three chases.
Well, thankfully, the funny thing is, I think we thought that that was the thing that might stop them from being a genuine championship team, right? But what it's actually done is the fact that they've also had a bunch of collapses at the top order, right? And their bowling really hasn't stood up the way that we thought it would as well, which means that they've got like three massive weaknesses now that don't really help them. And they've all been exploited at various times this year, right?
Yeah. It gives me a lot of sadistic joy whenever I see the finishing anchors fail.
I just think that it's funny in this impact sub era that we are now noticing these kinds of things. Whereas, as I said, I don't know if 4 or 5 years ago we would pick this up. Mm-hmm. And so what we're really looking at now is, you know, these guys that come in lower down the order and make a lot of runs, but don't actually have the impact that we think they do, because we remember them hitting all the sixes at the end of the game and we've forgotten about all the singles that they've taken before and all the dot balls. So they chew up an incredible amount of space. And I think it gets back to that point we just made about if you took David Miller out of this side, I'm trying to think of which team he would go to. If he was doing the Donovan Ferreira role, right, and playing in that, I think he makes that team, Rajasthan, better, because he's better when he goes in early. Donovan Ferreira has been in early a couple of times and doesn't do that. Donovan Ferreira is great at the late bit, muscling bit, but not in the middle. So you could argue that David Miller would make more sense there. And if you partnered Donovan Ferreira with Tristan Stubbs at Delhi, that's way better. Right?
Yeah.
You've got one of the guys that you're looking for, hey?
The funniest thing is Delhi traded away Donovan Ferreira, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, they traded away at that stage, he was still a project, wasn't he? More than a player.
Yeah.
Just becoming a player this year.
It feels like there's been like almost like an epidemic, Jared. It feels like there's so many finishing anchors this season for some reason. We used to have like one a generation, and this feels like this. We had two in one team now, which is hilarious.
I wonder if we had one, and a lot of it is, I wonder if guys like Chris Harris and Neil Fairbrother, who probably are slightly before this generation, we didn't have. I mean, JP Duminy we had and we didn't notice, right? And I've just mentioned that South Africa, I mean, I did do a piece on it.
Oh, Brad Hodge. He's one as well.
Yeah.
That era.
I did a whole piece on the South African team, but we never used the term finishing anchor because, was it you who came up with it?
Must have been, yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't have that phrase. So if you go back and read my piece from 2000, I know I was obsessed by that South African batting lineup at that stage for this reason, right? I didn't quite know we had the advanced stats, but I didn't quite use them in that way. But I could tell that there was this weird pattern of this batting lineup and the way that they kept being used at that time. So it was a fascinating little section or, you know, time that team was going about it in that way. And so I think now we have the ability, and I think that it's sort of, you know, my thinking that like once we can get some, I think there's about 28 different roles that, and that's probably under, it's probably about like 75 different roles that cricketers actually have, right? Because if you think about David Miller and Tristan Stubbs, they're actually not just finishing anchors. One's a right-handed finishing anchor, one's a left-hand finishing anchor. Yeah. Then you've got
Miller
that
they can hit spin.
Miller improved himself to hit spin, right? So you've got all these like different skill sets and everything that we can find out more and more about players. And I think why this piece is written is partly because of that, right? Yep. That what we're trying to say is that like you can't have two of the same player if they don't help. Because we've already come to the point where people won't have two anchors anymore, right? No. Is there a team with two genuine anchors this year?
It's a good question. No, I guess even LSG don't have it. KKR don't.
Unless, because Gill's not playing like one.
Yeah, Gill's not. Like, maybe Gujarat. It is probably Gujarat, isn't it? Like, they're still technically anchors.
I mean,
Sai and Butler, don't they?
If you count Butler as one, I'm not even sure Butler's. Yeah. I mean, Butler and Gill have, at various times this year, just come in and tried to smash from ball one, haven't they?
But it's so, one of those things where, like, because they've gone up, but so has the league initially, so I wonder if it just cancelled out.
Yeah. But the point being is that, like, there is an element of, like, we are, you know, we understand one thing at a time. And I think this will be the next big thing that we'll understand, which is there is a very big difference from Romario Shepherd and Tim David than there is from David Miller and Tristan Stubbs. They can all hit sixes, but thinking that they're exactly the same kind of players doesn't really help you. Like you have to, you know, I think the RCB batting lineup, as much as it's struggling of recent times, at least on paper, makes the most sense in the league. Because every player has a clear and different role of what they are going to do and how they are going to be successful. And once you end up with a situation where we have too many players, and if you go back to the Delhi one, I mean, they might be the other team that kind of had two anchors, right? In that they went with Pathum Nasunka and KL Rahul at the top, right? They then seem to have told Pathum Nasunka not to be an anchor, which means he's got out a bunch of times.
Really been an anchor this season, right? I would argue neither of them have been really, right?
And so again, so now what you're doing is you're picking these players who are very similar again, and it's worked for KL and it hasn't worked for Pathum Nasunka, right? So they've ended up in a situation again where they are they haven't really thought about the role definition of each individual player when they've gone in.
Yep. So if with Stubbs, Jared, what do you think is his next evolution is supposed to be? What would you advise him as an analyst? Would you tell him, okay, instead of being 11 of 10 every game, try being 15 of 10. There was a game where he was 14 of 10 and I was like jumping with joy. I'm like, fucking hell, he's finally changed.
I think the first thing I would say to him is that I'm not too worried about the 14 of 10 of 10 of 10, right? Like, as in, I wouldn't start the conversation there. I think I would start the conversation with, you can't possibly be this slow without it being a choice, right?
Yeah.
In the middle overs. So what are you choosing and why are you choosing it? Can we change your mindset in those middle overs, right? And then are there days when you can actually hit from ball one and what happens on those days, right? The vast majority of the time, you won't have to do that anyway. But, you know, I think there was a David Miller chase earlier this year and we were doing it on the watch along and And Miller got to about six, 5-off-5 or 6-off-6. And then he ended up winning the game when...
It was RCB. It was Romario, right? He hit 6-6-4 or something.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And so that's a perfect example of what me, you and Rob and others are talking about, which is he made it so he had to hit all those boundaries at the end, right? It was against Romario, so there was always a chance, but he made it so he had to hit all those boundaries at the end. And so as we saw in the game where he couldn't do that, you get yourself into this really bad position. So why always work from a position of negativity? And why do you always get behind the count, right? That's what we talk about in the piece. Getting behind the count, getting yourself to a position where you have to do something magical. And I think that for all the magical talk about Dhoni and Bevan, they were actually more algorithmic and calculated in what they did. And I think, if we're being really honest, what I would say to Tristan Stubbs is, I think your calculations are currently wrong.
That's a great way to end this podcast. Thank you so much for listening, guys. We'll see you in the next one.
Thank you for listening to this podcast on the Combox Network. There is an ad-free version of this you can find by supporting us on Patreon at Good Areas Podcast. You can also access our Discord channel there. Please like, subscribe, and rate this show. Every one of these helps us. If there was a guest on a show, you can find their links in the show notes. Huge thanks to Rakshit, Ishit, and everyone else who helps us get our content out there. If you want to know more about us, head to combox.tv. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.